This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Kids today have access to more information and opportunities to interact with more people than ever before, thanks to the internet and smart devices and social media. But with that access comes to more exposure than ever before to online predators, cyberbullying, and inappropriate material. And joining us to discuss how to keep kids safe while they're online are Tim Reddick, President and CEO of Intrust IT, a provider of technology and cloud computing solutions, and his daughter Lauren, and Cincinnati BBB Community Outreach Specialist Sandra Guile. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sandra, Tim, and Lauren, good to see everybody this afternoon.
Thanks very much for having us.
Sandra, just how much are children targets these days?
It's amazing. It really is. We're talking on average, children are 12 years old when they receive their first mobile device. 56% of children between 8 and 12 at least have a cell phone. So, I mean, they're connected at a very, very, very young age, if you considered 8 and 12 young. 60% of families who have provided a cell phone to their child did so between the ages of 10 and 11. That seems about the normal age, and I'm sure Tim will chime in with this as well, given that he's at that age right now with his daughter. And 20% provided their 8 to 9-year-olds with a cell phone. And a lot of parents are out there going, what? What's the reason? Especially if I can get them from to and from school or whatnot. And almost 70% of the preteens admit they're hiding their online activities. They know they're doing something and they know they shouldn't be doing whatever it is they're doing online. And that leaves a question for parents, grandparents, and guardians. What is my kid doing online?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know you're asking, why would you give somebody who's 8 a cell phone? I know one of the things that my wife and I we really like about it was the fact that we could keep up with our kids.
Right.
We could text them. We could call them and see where they were at. It was a good way to keep track of our kids.
Right. But, yeah. I mean, they're probably out and about with their friends, and they probably have the capability of calling somebody, hey, can I get a ride from point A to point B, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why would an 8-year-old be given such a... And maybe, Tim, you can answer that question.
Yes.
What is an appropriate age, Tim? Lauren?
So Lauren's 10, so she does not have a cell phone, just for the record. So she does not have one. Her brother, who's 13, does, and he's had it about a year. So he's about 12, and that was because soccer practice. You know, sometimes there'd be a rain out or something like that. We wouldn't be there. We'd need to be able to get back and pick him up. So it was more our convenience than what he wanted. So we didn't really bend to his pressure. It was something we wanted to do. So for Lauren, though, she's got her iPod and iPad and all the other...
I don't have an iPad.
Oh, no, iPad. I'm sorry, her iPod.
Your brother stole it, right?
Yeah. Keep him straight, Lauren.
Yeah, sorry, Lauren. So she's got her iPod that she does text from, so she is able to do that. It's kind of like a cell phone a little bit. It does have some of those capabilities, but when she's out of the house, it doesn't provide her that functionality. So when she's in the house or anywhere she can get Wi-Fi, she came to my office today. As soon as she walked through the door, how do I get on the Wi-Fi here? I mean, that's the first thing she wants to know, so she can text and keep up with what's going on. So.
Right. And I'm a mom of a 13-year-old. He does not have a cell phone, but yet when he's at home on his laptop, obviously, he needs it for school. A lot of schools are using computer electronic devices. And within the school environment, obviously, they have firewalls, they have protection. So they're in somewhat of a protected environment. It's that transition between school and home and being with the folks that you have to kind of watch out for it.
Mm-hmm.
We at BBB promote that whole trust in the marketplace between businesses and consumers and stuff like that. But we also want to make sure that our future consumers are safe as well. And that's why we brought Tim in as the expert for a online reputation that we have for our Street Smarts program coming up on June 21st, starting at 7:30 at Interact for Help. It is free. So if you're a parent, if you're a grandparent, if you're watching over a little one,
and you have lots of questions,
We encourage you to come out on the 21st.
Tim, I have a question. Was I sensing a pattern here when you were talking? Lauren's got an iPad. Mm-hmm. So she can use that to communicate and do various things. Are you kind of advocating taking it in maybe smaller steps? She doesn't have the phone yet, but she's got the iPad. And is that a way for parents to kind of control and teach their children how
Yeah, that's
how this all works.
Yeah, and that's what we've done with her and her brother too. And a lot of it is we don't want to overwhelm them with too much technology at once. So the iPod is a very small, it's a little smaller than an iPhone, and even some schools use those in the lower grades, second, third, fourth grade, for some type of interactive teaching. So she started with that, and so did her brother. And it's a very fine line between that and a cell phone. It has all the apps and functionality of an iPhone or an Android device, but it just doesn't have the cellular capability. So it's a pretty fine line between that. In the American Association of Pediatrics, they pretty much say you shouldn't expose any kid less than 2 years old to any screen time at all. And then once they're 2 years and older, then you kind of slowly phase it in up to 2 hours a day max is what their current recommendations are. So it's kind of 2 years and then up to 2 hours a day, which I can tell you is very low compared to most of the families that I talk to. Most of the kids are spending much more time than that on screen time. And the question is, what then do you define as screen time? Because TV is also considered mm-hmm. screen time. So trying to track all that and keep track of it across multiple devices that are around the house is very difficult to do.
Oh, yeah, especially if you have more than one kid.
Right. Right, exactly. So there are some devices out there. One of them I was talking to Sandra about earlier when we were in the waiting room that's recently come out, and Disney is behind it. It's called Circle. And what it allows you to do is it's a $99 device that allows you to take all the devices in your house and assign them to all the people in your house and then assign limitations on the amount of time that they can spend across all their devices in a given day. And you can also set times of the day that they can use their devices. So, for instance, Lauren, I think...
I can't use it past 9.
Yeah.
Does that work on spouses, too?
It does work on spouses and yourself, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's also got an app on your phone, so if it's time for dinner, you can hit the pause button, and it stops the internet for everybody in your house.
Oh.
So to get them to come out and say, why did the internet stop? So, but yeah, 9 p.m., Lauren is cut off, and she can't use her device on the internet anymore.
But Ethan gets it to 10.
Yeah, he's a little older. She knows all these numbers very
you would like more time, wouldn't you, Lauren?
Yes.
Okay. It'll come.
Yeah.
It'll come. Sandra, how much are kids concerned about things like identity theft? How much should that concern them? Because that's one of the things that you know, that they're potentially exposed to in the internet world.
Well, and it's interesting you should ask that because 44% of teens actually list identity theft as their top concern about possible consequences online, but only 30% are more concerned with posts creating problems with colleges or employers. And the trouble with this is that a lot of times, several of them, if they're not educated on how to use the internet, don't think about what they post and how visible that post is to everybody. They think that what they post, whether it's a photo, it's a tweet, it's a statement, it's an opinion, is only visible to their family, friends, or social network that they think they're sharing it to. They don't realize that can get shared by that friend, that family, or that affiliate. And a future employer could see it, so it could shoot their chances for a scholarship, an internship, or a relationship. And Tim's not nodding his head in agreement that they don't think the consequences that could happen down the road. So cybersecurity comes into play because what happens is there are some creepy folks out there in the internet and the deep web that are looking for that kind of information. They say, we saw that post about such and so, and you shared this type of information. We can use that against you. We can use that against your family. We can use that to scam you.
Thoughts on that, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of identity theft with children, what's changed recently this year is now in the state of Ohio, you can freeze your children's credit. You weren't able to do that up until this year in Ohio. You could do it, I think, in Indiana previously, but mm-hmm. you can do that in Ohio now. So I think all 50 states now?
I'm pretty sure it is. I have to look up on that, but I am ecstatic that they passed that.
Yeah. So that's anywhere from $3 to $5 to freeze your kid's credit. It's not that they're going to do anything, but somebody else could get a hold of your kid's Social Security number and then use it to apply for loans and do other things that you may not even be aware of until you go to file their taxes in the future, or for them when they go to try and get their first credit card and you find out, all this credit history you have to get cleared away. So freezing your kid's credit history or credit file is a great thing to do.
It is, and it protects them on so many different levels because you don't know, you may have some dishonest family members that are looking for that information to do other things. So this really protects them on so many different levels. So when they go to buy their first car, open their credit, their own checking account, then they can do so without having fear that somebody else has already done it for them.
Tim, what about protecting your online reputation? Is that a really big issue nowadays, what Sandra was talking about earlier, that you know kids will just post stuff and not think about the future consequences?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's so difficult now as a parent to track all the different methods that they can post with, from Facebook to Snapchat to Yik Yak and all the other different applications that are out there that they can open other email accounts without your knowledge and those types of things. So it is difficult to do, and it's definitely a conversation you have to have with your kids. I live in Mason, and the Mason School District recently had some roundtable discussions where they invited parents in to talk about parenting in the digital age. So it was really interesting to hear all the parental concerns and things that they may not be aware of that are going on within the school, and how the school is addressing that. And they're overwhelmed with all this new digital technology just as much as the families are. So I would really commend Mason for doing that. I would hope a lot of other school districts are doing the same thing, and that it can really spur a good dialogue moving forward so that we can do a better job. And they have some programs that they're putting on with, like, the DARE program, and that to let kids know that they need to think before they post, and not to post anything they wouldn't say to somebody's face online.
Or even try to post something other than themselves, meaning try to create an account under somebody else and then pretend to be somebody else, because they could really hurt somebody else's reputation and damage that as well. The other thing, too, is that a lot of these kids don't understand that what they post out there stays up there. They may think they may have deleted it maybe on their own account, but it goes back to what I said earlier. It could have been shared somewhere else, and it's still floating out there somewhere in cyberspace, and it could come back and haunt them.
So it just doesn't drift off and go away forever?
No, not as much as we would like it to. I mean, there's probably stuff that we here in this room, we probably posted or said something and said, oh, not a good idea.
Tim, you're talking about the schools. With so many school assignments requiring internet access for research and that kind of thing, I mean, how as a parent can you monitor that and keep that under control?
So there are some free tools for sure that you can use. I mean, the one I highly recommend that's free is OpenDNS. And that allows you to set categories that they can go to, restrict categories of different websites that they can go to in your home. So, for instance, pornography or swimsuit pictures, those types of things, those categories can be restricted through OpenDNS. And there's a free version for parents for home use. We use an enterprise version for our clients. And then they have one that's like $20 a year if you want to have support. And that restricts every device that connects to your Wi-Fi in your house. There's a way to set it up so no matter if it's your computer or the kids down the street bring some device into your house and they connect up to your network, they're still protected as well. So they're still restricted. So that's a very good one. And then Windows has their Windows Family Safety. If you have a Windows PC at home, that will monitor all their searches, where they go on the web, and then how much. You can also set restrictions on time and time of day as well on the computer. So, and I get a weekly report from Family Safety that shows where my kids went, what they were searching for, those types of things. So those are some ways that you can, some free ways that you can protect your kids.
I use Windows Family, and the only thing I would caution on that, folks, is that it does not monitor Chrome. So they can hop onto Chrome and they can go online and play games and chat with other people.
Don't give Lauren any ideas. Are you listening to this one?
It's just a word of caution. That's all. Yeah. The other trend is too, is you made the comment about schools using like online classrooms and, you know, snow days. I'm sure schools are looking for options for kids to keep up with all the schoolwork and testing and so forth and so on. As a parent, I would strongly encourage just monitoring your kids and their homework. They have this great thing called Progress Book. You can see how they're doing with their grades and everything else. And it lets the student know that, hey, mom and dad are watching. They know what I'm doing. And a lot of times that may even rein in on what exactly they're doing online and making sure all the homework assignments are turned in, because they know mom and dad are going to find out 9 times out of 10 before they get home.
Well, you bring up an interesting point here, and you're talking about cybersecurity, and most people think cybersecurity is something that's at the business and corporate level, but
it's at home.
It's too. A family level. It's a family thing, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is. It affects both institutions. And when I'm talking about, you know, cybersecurity, I'm talking about passwords and I'm talking about usernames. BBB goes out in the community and talks about cybersecurity, but we talk about it at two different levels. We talk about it at the business level and the IT level, which you can always go to your IT department saying, hey, I got this really funky looking email. But at home, you don't have anybody to go to except if you've got a relative that's in that business. You have to be more proactive on yourself and talk to your kids, whether they're 8, 10, 12, 14 and say, look, you've got to be careful what you're talking about online, who you're talking to, who you're interacting with, because a lot of that can come back and bite you.
So, Tim, how do families talk about this without the...
Without Lauren listening.
Without getting in an argument with Lauren or whoever.
Well, there's a excellent book called iRules, and it's allows you to put together a contract with your kids for acceptable online usage. And she also has a website with a lot of resources in that as well. And actually, when I went to that Mason Parenting for the Digital Age, they actually handed out an example contract that that's pretty much says that the device is owned by the parents. Mm-hmm. You're using this as, you know, it's not a right, it's a privilege. And when somebody calls, your parents call, you're to answer, you're not to ignore it. You know, there's a bunch of rules that they sign and they all agree to. So it's a really good way to make sure that there aren't any unspoken rules that the kids aren't aware of. But the other thing that's important in that is when the kids do make a mistake, and this is something you also have to talk with them, is they are going to make mistakes. Heck, I make mistakes on where they may go on the internet, and they may stumble into something and not realize what it is, that we're not going to get all bent out of shape and pull the devices away from them for any extended amount of time, because then they're going to be less likely to come to you when they do have a question or they do get in trouble and they need your help. So that's another important discussion to have with your kids as well.
And that's hard to do, especially, you know, it's been a few days since we've all been kids and making mistakes because we all assume that we're perfect. So we have to kind of rewind the clock a little bit and say, yeah, I remember the time when. But of course, we made different kinds of mistakes without electronics.
Yeah. Where this really hit home for me is Elizabeth Smart. If you remember her, she was that teenager that was abducted and held hostage. She felt in the midst of being kidnapped, or after she was kidnapped and she was being held hostage, that it was her fault and that her parents wouldn't accept her and they wouldn't love her anymore because she was damaged goods. So she goes out and speaks and has a foundation to make sure that parents are talking to their kids, to let their kids know that no matter what happens, no matter what you do, I'm going to love you no matter what. Right, Lauren?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with Amy and Mason. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go right ahead.
Well, I just was curious. I have older children, and a lot of the advice that's been given, I wish I would have known years ago. So I guess I'm curious, how can I go and retrace kind of the online rules and set some boundaries for kids who are already in their mid-teen years?
So, yeah, it's the number one recommendation I have, which you're too late for that, is to get started as soon as possible, because it's much more difficult to go back and set boundaries when they haven't had them than it is to start with boundaries. But when you're going to go back, depending upon how old your kids are, one of the things that's difficult to do is there are a lot of tools out there that set a lot of restrictions and send a lot of monitoring and overwhelm you with the amount, especially if you have several kids, the amount of texting that goes on, the amount of messages that are happening. So one technology that's proving to be very interesting is from a company called Bark, and the website is bark.us, B-A-R-K.us, like a dog. And what it does is it uses machine learning and it monitors all of your kids' social networks and will look for anything that would be out of the ordinary, like suicidal thoughts or bullying or those types of things. So you don't have to sit there and read every single message or grab their phone and read every single text every single day. It does it behind the scenes for you and kind of alerts you to what's going on. Plus, when you do run into a situation, it actually gives you some coaching advice and some recommendations around that. So there was I forget the founder's name, but he dropped out of a big company out in Silicon Valley to start this because he saw all the challenges with it. So,
very good, but lots to think about with this, isn't there?
It really is. And you can find more great advice on June 21st with our BBB Street Smarts program, 7:30 a.m. Interact for Health. It is free, so I encourage everybody who's listening to join us. Go to BBB.org to register. You can ask all your questions to Tim, who's done a great job today in sharing all of this great information.
And we have a link to that at WVIQ.org as well. So Sandra, Tim, and Lauren, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Tim Reddick, President and CEO of Intrust IT, and his daughter Lauren, and Cincinnati BBB Community Outreach Specialist Sandra Guile.